Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Philip Ellenberg, 11 years of combination experience, senior firefighter on engine and ladder 82 for the city of Hardeeville Fire Department in South Carolina. Initially, his plan was going the route of law enforcement, but his dad mentioned to Philip about becoming a volunteer firefighter instead. He gave it a go, and that's all he needed to know this was where he belonged. What I appreciate about Philip and our conversation is how he discusses the topic of burnout. Whether you're volunteer or career, burnout most definitely exists, and it's important to understand the signs and symptoms before you lose sight of what truly matters in your life. As always, each and every guest drops gems and nuggets for those listening to hopefully pick up on. With that, I present Philip Ellenberg.
Name's Philip Ellenberg, currently with the City of Hardeeville Fire Department down in Hardeeville, South Carolina. I've been here for 10 years, career. Started as an explorer when I was 15. My fire chief, my first drill night when I started down in Hampton, South Carolina at my volunteer house, he told me, he said, "You'll get this in your blood and this will be all you ever want to do." And I thought he was crazy. And then I started running calls and I figured that was what I wanted to do for my career. So originally I wanted to be a game warden or law enforcement or something like that. So I was going to go to college and do that whole thing. And, start with the fire service and never look back.
Okay.
So I was in Hampton for 10 years. Started, like I said, when I was 15. Put myself through the fire academy. They sponsored me to go, but I had to pay my own way. Me and a couple buddies, we all went through the fire academy here in South Carolina together. Spent 8 weeks up there, had a blast. Got out of the fire academy, worked part-time. In Hampton, we were a combination department volunteer, and we staffed with part-timers during the day. So I did that for a little bit, for a year, and then trying to get picked up somewhere. I applied everywhere from the low country down here up to around Columbia, Richmond area, up around. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get picked up anywhere, so I went to work for a ice machine making company for a little bit with one of my buddies and ended up getting a call from Hardeeville when I was 18 or 19, and that's all she wrote. Been there pretty much ever since. Had a little break in service there, went to a different department and came back, and can't say enough good things about that place. Gave me my start, and I'm forever grateful for them giving me my start there.
Okay. No other family members in the fire service, just you?
Just me. My dad, so my dad's a pastor, was a pastor. That's why we were in Hampton. And he knew I wanted to do the whole law enforcement thing. And the fire chief, our volunteer fire chief, went to our church. And my dad came to me one day and said, "Hey, I think you'll like this. Be something for you to do, volunteer with them, do whatever." So, like I said, started there, went through I don't even think they teach anymore. Went through 1152 when I was 15, 16. And then those 2 years after that, waiting to turn 18 so I could actually fight fire was torture. Walk and do work and right. Just go for it. It ate me alive, but it's been great ever since.
Okay. Now I understand that. When I joined, it was the same thing. Hey, you're exterior only. And like, it was fine. You know, like I didn't know what I didn't know. But right. I remember the first structure fire I did run, you know, I sat back and I like helped the driver with whatever he needed. And then I just like watched the show and I'm watching these dudes like stretching lines, forcing doors, going in. And I'm like, this is yeah. And then once I was of age, like I went and got all my training like you did. So, but you started a lot younger than I did.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I started, I started with 1152, and that was the only class I could take because I couldn't take fire one, fire two at that time until I was 17 mm-hmm. or 18. Mm-hmm. Since then, they've started doing the fire programs in the high schools and stuff. And I helped with that a little bit when I was in Hampton at the local high school. We went and taught some of those kids the fire one, fire two, all that good stuff. But when I started, I couldn't, that was 1152 was all I could take. So I took that and just was kind of in limbo for the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
All right. But you mentioned earlier, before, right as we started, that fire chief that had that impact on you. Can you tell us a little bit about how I'm assuming he was able to give you the information you needed and guide you into guide you to the roadmap that you're on right now?
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to get my start in Hampton. That fire chief, he had been at that fire department for pretty much his whole life, for 30, 40 years. His dad was a fireman there too. He had been just got fire chief probably, I want to say, a year or two before I got there. But all those guys that I came up with in Hampton, they were all career somewhere else. The deputy chief there, he was a retired lieutenant from Burton Fire Department down here in the Low Country, and I was brought up around some heavy hitters, and they we tried the best we could to run the day-to-day stuff with the volunteers and the part-timers like a career department. So we had daily duties, we did training, we ran calls. It really opened my eyes to how the brotherhood is, because we had a blast back then. It was go to calls, cut up, train, and repeat. That was it for pretty much the first 10 years of my career. And when I started full time for until I moved to Georgia 2 years ago, I was on a fire truck pretty much every day of the week somewhere. I couldn't get enough of it. Running, hanging out with the guys, like that was my life. It still is my life, obviously. But I don't volunteer here in Georgia yet. I'd like to eventually, but me and my girlfriend, we just had our first son, first kid. He's 16 months old, so I'm trying to spend as much time with him as I can. So maybe later down the road, I'll start to try to volunteer down here. But
I understand that, man. I understand that. Congratulations on to you and the missus.
thank you.
A boy, you said?
Yes, sir.
Boy. Okay. And I understand, like, take your time with that. Like you mentioned, when they're that young, it's crazy how fast that they age and grow up. I don't volunteer anymore. There are times I wish that I do, but like priorities aren't lined up for that. So I totally understand. Totally
Yeah,
understand.
and like I told you, for years I spent a somewhere. I was every day on a fire truck somewhere. I burnt myself out, and because I'm in Hampton, I made it up to lieutenant, and we rotated the kind of like a battalion vehicle through the officers. So if most of the time, if I wasn't at work, I tried to take that vehicle home with me so I could run whatever, and I burnt myself out pretty quick with it. So this after leaving there, it was hard because I loved those guys to death. Can't say enough good things about them. Obviously, that's really where I got my feet wet. But this time away and just spending time with my family and working a job has been very good for me.
Okay. We're going to fast forward a little bit. You mentioned that you were applying any and everywhere you could, and finally you got the call. So I'm assuming, did you have to go through any sort of recruit class or onboard training before they put you on the floor?
No, so it's funny. I was, like I told you, I'm putting in everywhere, never got a call back. I actually, one of my buddies worked at Hardeeville and told me to put in. And when I put in my application the first time, they threw it in the trash because in the where I had my experience, I didn't specify Hampton City or town or Hampton County. So the deputy chief at the time, the assistant chief, he threw it in the trash, and I didn't know anything about it until my buddy had heard and told me. He was like, "Hey man, put in again." So I put in again, made sure I clarified it, and they gave me a call. Like I said, I was working for Scotsman Ice Machines back in the day, and I had just started there. I'd been there for probably a month or two, and got the call for Hardeeville, and I got a call for another department to go test right next door to us. And my boss there, my supervisor, she knew that I was trying to get in the fire service somewhere, and she knew that it was strictly just a job until I could find a job somewhere else. So I went to her and told her, I said, "Hey, I need these 2 days off next week. going to test for a department, full transparency with her. She was cool about it. And I went and tested with Hardyville on a Wednesday, I think it was. The next day, I got laid off from that ice machine company because they were having layoffs and they knew I was trying to go somewhere else.
Okay.
And then that Friday, I got the phone call to come back in for the chief's interview and got a job offer from Hardyville.
Okay.
The chief, he was like, "So when can you start?" He said, "I'm sure you'll want to work out your 2 weeks." And I was like, "Well, I just got laid off yesterday. So the sooner the better."
All right.
I had my fire one, went through the academy. I failed my fire two because I was a dumb 18-year-old kid and didn't study like I should have at the academy. So they let me go straight to the floor. And then I went and did the volunteer schedule fire two class a couple months later and got that. When I first started with Hardyville, we ran three engines out of three stations. One engine was three man, the inside station, and then the two outlying station were both two man stations. So for the first few months, I spent most of my time on the three man rig with my captain, going through my probe year and doing all that good stuff. And then I'd get bounced out every once in a while to a different station. But did that. And then probably 6 months, I think, after I started, they sent all of us through EMT school. So we were strictly fire. We'd run EMS calls, but it was, we'd run like the cardiac arrests and shootings and stuff like that. But we mainly focused on the wrecks and fires and stuff like that. So got my EMT and that's pretty much it.
Okay. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Hardyville, the size, where it's located, the amount of personnel, things of that nature?
Yeah. So, city of Hardyville, like I said, it's down where the last exit on 95 going to Georgia. So we're right down there. We're probably 30, 45 minutes outside of Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Okay.
Right now we have four stations. We run one truck company down, on the southernmost end of the county. And then we run three engines. And then at my station, we jump trucks. So we jump between a ladder truck and an engine. In my area, we're in the retirement center communities. We got, Sun City, a couple retirement homes. So we stay pretty busy with them for medical call wise. But then our, both of our ladder trucks have a full complement of extrication tools and struts, and all sorts of cribbing. So we run those to any, obviously any fire, but any extrication too, we'll go in our first or second due area. We'll take that.
Okay.
So we stay for the most part in the engine. We'll take the ladder to fire alarms and stuff when we have them, but that's lately been kind of few and far between. So, but we run, our minimum staffing for two of our stations is three. And then the other two, we run two man as minimum. And then we also run an ambulance. So we just opened that up probably a year ago, 2 years ago, something like that. But we're very lucky with our administration and the council and our city. We run dual medic on the ambulance and they do their best to just put people who want to be on the ambulance on it. So when it first started out, it was kind of rough with people getting stuck on it. I say stuck. It's really not that bad, but you know, firemen don't, they want to do fireman stuff. They don't really want to be on an ambulance. But they've done very good at making sure we have dual medic and people who actually want to be on the box. So,
Okay.
That's been a little bit of a growing pain, but it's working itself out now and it's, I don't want to say smooth sailing, but it's going good.
Okay. So one ambulance for the entire department?
Yep. So we run, they run first due out of that house's first due area. And then they'll go out to the outlying stations, if the county ambulances are out or on something, they'll go and back them up. Like last night, we were down to zero ambulances in the county because we had two fires going on, and everybody got banged out for medical calls at once. So it was pretty hectic for a while, but they just are primary areas for the city, and then we'll bump out to the county as they need to.
Okay. All right. Before I start asking questions, just because I'm gonna assume it might give out a little feedback to the listeners. Can you just move the phone just a little bit?
Yeah, sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
Yep.
All right. Other than that, so what is your within the city of Hardeeville, what is the first alarm assignment consist of if you get a structure fire?
So it's going to be, depending on where it is in the city, you'll get three of our engines and the ladder truck, or if it's a commercial box and my engine's first due, we take the ladder truck, and we'll get a county engine and then two city engines, and then an ambulance. And most of the time we try to get two ambulances because the county ambulance, they do fight fire from their ambulance, and ours is strictly rehab. So it's up to the officer's discretion. Like they have gear and everything on it, but we try to keep them available for patient care for now. I could see that maybe changing in the future. I don't know. I don't run, but that's what it is right now. So it's a officer's discretion. If they need them to go make a quick grab or something like that, then that's 100% okay. But they try for patient care and rehab for the firemen.
And is it engines do engine, trucks do truck work, or how does that, or is your truck equipped? And I don't care if it is because I just want to get a feel of your department.
Yep. So we have, like I said, two ladders. We have a 100-foot stick and a 100-foot platform. They both have pumps. They have, like, you ask 20 different people, you might get different answers on what it is. I think it's a Quint because it's got the pump and whatever. We're trying to build the culture of trucks do truck stuff and engines do engine work. Me and one of the lieutenants from Hardeeville, we actually just went this past summer to the Soda City Truckman Academy, and got a wealth of knowledge from JJ and those guys down there that run that program. They are awesome. So we're trying to slowly implement some of that stuff. Obviously, with staffing, it's kind of hard sometimes, and with the jump truck and whatnot, it's hard to get people in that mindset because we're so young into it. When I first started, we had a 75-foot Sutton rear mount or mid mount, but it was also a jump truck, and it got there and it pretty much just sat. So now trying to build that culture is obviously going to take a while, but we're trying to slowly work that way to set tasks for the engine and for the truck.
And no, and that's totally fine. Like nothing happens overnight. I'm glad that you were able to go to outside training and bring that information back to your organization. But I will have to say, your manpower situation, having to do a lot with less, and this is not a shot at your organization because there are organizations, they have to do what they have to do. So my question to you is, when it comes to your manpower pool, there is no hiding in Hardeeville. Like you're either into the job or you're not.
You hit the nail on the head. You can tell the guys who, and they're few and far between, who sit on the recliner all day, and the guys who actually get out there and get after it. We're very lucky. Our training chief, he is pushing hard for a aggressive search culture and being firemen. So we just did a department-wide search week. So we did that. And we're pushing hard to bring in outside training and put on a little micro conference with different departments around here in the Low Country and do search, VES, truck work, all that good stuff. Stuff that we don't normally get to do at most of our departments around here because, like I said, the truck culture is so young in our department. So he's doing a great job of pushing for that strong culture for search and training and all that.
Fantastic. Okay, fantastic. Your outlining stations. You said they're two men trucks. Driver and firefighter, driver and officer.
Yeah, so when I first started, that's how it was. There's my station, it's would be considered an outlying station, and we run three. So we have a officer, driver, and a fireman. Our other outlying station down at the other end of the city is a two-man rig. It's a truck company, so it's two man, and then out of the ambulance house, they can drop down to two as well. So they'll have two on the engine and two on the medic unit.
Okay.
Yep. So with our staffing, we're, everybody short staffed right now, trying to get people to apply. So some shifts they'll get to have three people on the rig, and some people they don't. It just depends on the shift and the day.
Okay. And do you have officers on those outlining stations?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
So
Okay.
every rig in the city, they actually just made it a policy. I want to say this past year, the year before, that they have to have some sort of officer on it. We have the master firefighter role that we just came out with 2 years ago, and that's a backup lieutenant. So they can go out and ride that, but it's not going to be. It used to be it would drop the officer and it would just be the driver and the fireman, but now there is some sort of officer there that
Okay.
has tested for that role and been signed
Okay.
off.
Okay.
So
And
that's
how far apart are your stations?
within 5 miles for the ISO.
Okay.
Yeah, so some of them might be right at 5 miles. I should probably know that, but at the other end of the city from us, the ride from 81 to 84 is a it's pushing that 5 miles. It's a pretty decent ride. So
Okay. So you do have some stations where it can be John Wayne time.
yeah, absolutely. That station, it's our slowest station, but they catch the most fires out of there in that county area. So they run a lot with the county engine down there. So that's also a two-man rig. They do two man on the engine and two man on the ambulance. So they'll, if it's, I forgive me if I'm wrong, the county or most of them will drop to one on the ambulance or put that ambulance out of service. And the third will jump as third man on the engine. And then they'll either bring the ambulance just in case, or they'll take a tanker. That medic or whoever will jump on the tanker and take that to the fire. So for the first, could be 5, 10 minutes, it's five guys there potentially until the battalion and next do get there. So there are outlying parts of the county where it'll be, you'll be by yourself for a little minute.
You gotta do what you gotta do, and I trust me, I get it. I get it. I just like to get a feel of how Hardeeville is situated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right. So you get through your onboarding process, you hit the floor as a career firefighter. Let's just say after the first year being a career firefighter, was it everything you thought it would be when you were a volunteer dreaming of that moment?
Yeah, absolutely. Hardeeville now, it's good for the citizens. We don't run that much fire. I say that, but the last four shifts in a row for there's been a fire somewhere that one of our engines or trucks has gone to.
Damn, I hear you. Okay.
Me and my lieutenant, we took off together the two shifts ago, and we went fishing and just hung out with his brother, and our engine and our fireman actually caught a first in fire that was pretty nasty, and then they've caught one every day since then. We went to one last night, an apartment that the sprinklers put out before we got there. So I was really just checking for extension. And then our outlying station, Tower 84, they went to a fire last night. So it's been good. It's been a good little uptick for not running a lot of fire for the past few years. But when I first started, we ran a lot of fires and a lot of entrapments on the interstate. So I got some good experience pretty early on, especially between Hardeeville and Hampton. I got some good fire experience there. Over the years, they've cut all the trees out of the median in our part of 95. So that's taken away from a lot of the entrapments there. And now we run a lot of medical calls.
It's everywhere, man. It's everywhere.
Yeah. But yeah, that first year, it was awesome. I had my training chief now was actually my captain when I first started, and he pushed me. We trained a lot and we trained hard. And it was everything I could have asked for.
Okay. While you bring that up, my question to you is mentorship. How important is it for either any individual that's been in the fire service or especially new individuals coming in to whether you want to call that person a mentor or not, but find that individual that gets you, that is actually into the job. You see they're not there just for the paycheck. How important is it to associate yourself with individuals like that?
I think it's extremely important. I was able, between Hardeeville and Hampton, I surrounded myself with guys who loved the job. You know, obviously in Hampton, we ran one or two guys during the day on the part-time list, but we'd always have four or five guys just hanging out because they wanted to run calls and be with the guys. And then in Hardeeville, my captain, when I first started, Woody Childs, he was a huge mentor to me. He loved the job. He loved doing fireman stuff. And it's extremely important to find those people that will push you and that will tell you if you're messing up. I tell all of our new guys now when they come to us, find one or two guys that you want to emulate and be like one day and stick to them. And it will benefit you immensely in the long run.
Love it. Love that. Okay. When it comes to the term aggressive or aggressiveness, in your opinion, what does that word or that term mean to you?
So I think being aggressive, you know, everybody's going to say it's going to be making the surge, making the push. But I think it also goes into, we have to be well-trained enough and smart enough to be able to do that effectively. You know, some people use the term cowboy as it could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. I've always, coming up, we were considered cowboys in Hampton County because we went and we did the job and we got stuff done. And I've always thought it's a good thing, because you're going to go find work and you're going to, if you think something can be done, if you think you can get in that room and search or make that push, you're going to push that IC to be like, hey, let me go do this or let us go try. So I think being, taking classes and being well-trained and smart is part of being aggressive, because we don't want to be incompetent and just go rushing into stuff to potentially get us hurt if the need's not there. But we want to be smart and also aggressive. We want to be competent professionals when we're doing the job.
For sure. Okay. And I'm assuming too, with a department of your size and how you guys seem to be kind of like you guys seems to be stretched out, like you have to have an aggressiveness when it comes to working at Hardeeville, because yes, you have help coming, but you're not going to wait like for help to arrive before you start fire attack or whatever the case may be. Like, you have to work with what you got and you have to put pretty much foot into ass in order to get some action going, right?
Yep, absolutely. And our administration, our chiefs, they've done a very good job of, as long as you can articulate as an officer why you did something, they're going to back you 100%. They're not going to get onto you if you go and make a search before another engine gets there, if you have reasonable suspicion, or if you go and make the attack, they don't want us to sit in the yard and wait.
Okay. And so, but I'm assuming though, you know, and this might be a little bit like outside of your scope or knowledge, but I'm assuming your chief officers are probably pushing hard to get that extra man on these other trucks to get your staffing up to where it needs to be.
Absolutely. So, the city, we're growing leaps and bounds from where we were when I first started, and we're trying to get dedicated third man to each rig as the minimum. So it's a process like anything else, but they're trying to get that pushed for us.
Okay. When it comes to realistic training, with an organization your size, can you tell us a couple things you do when you're on shift just to get those extra sets and reps in?
Yeah, so me and my officer, we like to train. He came from a smaller department that neighbors ours a couple years ago, and he is extremely knowledgeable when it comes to training and everything. And we do a lot of gear circuits, and we incorporate training into that. So we'll do like mazes and writ training, and we try to do something every shift with that training. We do mask up drills, forcible entry. We really try to hit the basics. That's what makes you good in the long run. You know, there's all this flashy stuff that you can go do, but if you're not good at the basics, that's not really going to help you in the long run. So we try to hammer the basics at something every shift, whether it be throwing ladders or masking up, forcible entry, stretching lines. We try to do something.
Do you guys have a drill ground, or do you just go to a particular station and do your training?
So every station now, with the exception of one, has a forcible entry door at it. So we have that. A couple of the stations have props. So like we can set up courses, and we call it Woody's Playhouse at my station. It's this structure in the bay that has a window that you can do bailouts out of, and it's got a below grade rescue. It's got stairs on it, so you can go up, do a VES practice, going up and down stairs, doing firemen up and down stairs. And like I said, we like to set up a lot of courses and do PT like that. So we'll incorporate that into our PT every day, and throw ladders and do a search, remove victims, remove firemen, stuff like that.
Okay. When it comes to outside training, you already mentioned that, you know, you and your lieutenant or your officer were fortunate to go to the Truckman Academy with Soda City Training. So I'm assuming your department is very positive and supportive. Of course, when they can send people, because sometimes it's like, hey, manpower's a little tight, but right, they are all for getting outside of your bubble to
yep.
learn something and bring it back.
Yeah, they will send you to whatever class you want to go to. Like you said, if staffing allows, they will cover your spot on the rig. And then if it doesn't, you have to find your own coverage sometimes. But they will pay for whatever class you want to go to. And I tell guys all the time, especially new guys, with our department now, like I said earlier, we're not running a lot of fires, so they're not getting that experience. So going to these outside classes and going to conferences with live fire is different, obviously, than the real thing, but it's the closest thing you can get to getting those sets and reps in, and feeling some heat and being fatigued and doing the basics. So I tell guys all the time to go find these conferences, Carolina Fire Days, MAFC, all those places. We've started doing one down here with Live Fire, and I tell them every chance they can to go find something. I know Soda City does a lot of burns with their acquired structure program, and we've had them come down and for us for a house this past year. I think we're going to try to have them down again. But finding those classes to push yourself and get that experience that you might not be getting is extremely important.
Yes, no, for sure. And that's the thing too. It's not a shot at any organization, but like, from like, for instance, my organization, we don't burn as much as we want to. I mean, you talked about, to me, it felt like you're rubbing salt in the wound there, talking about your fires that you've had. And I'm like, shit, all we've had is a bunch of teasers and nothing else coming with it. But it's just, it's important that if you want the experience, sometimes you're gonna work for an organization that just can't give you that. Meaning, like your chief officers aren't gonna go light houses and buildings on fire for you to get the experience. But if you can take the time to go to these outside trainings, live fire, like you said, live fire is better than no fire. It's better than the theatrical smoke. Like, there's a time and a place where we should do theatrical smoke for, the crawl, walk, run method, where we can get our sets and reps. But there's no better feeling than actually getting to go and play with fire, hone your skills. So I love the fact that you talked about how outside training definitely benefits you. And where you're at, I'm assuming, how far is it for you to get to Massey? Probably not that far.
No, it's probably like 2 or 3 hours. It's not
Yeah, it's not bad at all. Okay. And South Carolina, man, they're doing some really good things. Especially when it comes to their officer development program, I think they had just started. So, like, you, and that's the thing. It's you're in South Carolina, but whoever's listening to this, find out what's going on around your area, because nowadays there's a conference or a micro conference within driving distance that you can feed that fire, get that fuel that you need, to better yourself.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, our state academy does the Officer Development Academy, and then because of that, right across the line where I live here in Georgia, they have a couple departments have come together and started their own version of that, because of what the South Carolina Academy has done. So it's starting to spread, and they're doing some good things down here too on this side in Georgia.
Okay. As far as your career, you mentioned that your title is senior firefighter. So how long did you wait before you decided to go to the next step, and why? It's a two-part question.
So I mentioned earlier I had a little break with Hardeeville. When I first started, I was a fireman, went through probation fireman for a year and a half ish, and then promoted to driver. And then probably another year and a half, 2 years after that, I actually promoted to lieutenant, at the city. And then was a lieutenant for a year, went to a department in the upstate, was there for a couple months, and then decided to come back to Hardeeville. And I came back as a driver. I feel like for me, I was capable of doing the job. I could obviously do the job, but I promoted too young. I was 24 when I was got made a lieutenant, and I had a lot of maturing I had to do for myself. So this time around, I've been back going on 3 years, I think, with the city, and I'm in no rush to get back to the full-time officer seat. I'll test for master firefighter whenever that comes back around. But I'm in no hurry to go back to being a lieutenant. I'm enjoying my crew right now, enjoying driving, and still learning every day. So yeah, the first time around, like I said, I promoted pretty quick. I don't regret it because it taught me a lot. But this time around, I'm not in as much hurry to get back to the seat.
Okay. And I understand every department has situations where sometimes you're going to need that individual to move up. Like, hey, we're going to push you. We actually need you to do it. And I get it. And I'm 100% with waiting until you as the individual, as the individual feel like you're ready to move up the ranks. 'Cause I know for me, I took my damnedest time, and I'm fine with this. Some people are like, man, you were ready. And I'm like, nope. Like, when you're ready, you know that you're ready. But what I commend you for is the fact that you moved up, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we all have maturing to do. I was a former 18, 20 something year old, thought I knew it all, man. I didn't know shit. Like, just full, I didn't. Like, you know, as a volunteer, I held the rank of a chief officer's position. And looking back, I didn't need that. And I feel like the only reason why I got it was because I was very active like you. I ran a shit ton of calls. Bro, when I moved out of my parents' house, I bought a townhome across the street from my local volunteer fire department. And I only did it because it was across the street. Like, so I get it. Like, you know, when you're active and you're into the job, but you know, age does play a factor. So I 100% commend you for admitting that because, you know, sometimes we need that reality check that I'm just not ready. And so I applaud you for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of times guys in the job, I know everybody probably sees that you get 3 or 4 years on the job and you start thinking you know everything and you're like, oh yeah, I got it figured out. And then whether it be a fire or somebody that you look up to comes along and they humble you and you're like, all right, and God gives you that reality check, and we've all been there and had it, I feel like.
No, for sure. For sure. I want to talk about that because I feel like this topic is important, man. Burnout, whether it's career or volunteer, because you can burn yourself out on both ends, regardless of if your department's paid or strictly volunteer. I can say there was a time where, like you, and I'm sure like very others, like I lived, breathed, and sleep firehouse. Like I worked my regular part-time job, I worked at a paint store, and when I wasn't there or at home, I was at the firehouse. Like that's where I'd be. Meetings, drill nights, running calls, weekends. Like my teenage years was different from normal teenagers, and I'm sure yours was the exact same way. That was normal for us. But if you could explain how, because I remember you said you were a lieutenant and you took the car home. I remember when we started doing that, we had guys taking the car home. That way, we always got a vehicle out to respond, you know, on our first due calls. But how important is it for the individual to realize, like, you don't want to overdo it?
It's extremely important. Like I said, I got pretty burnt out towards the end, before I moved, just with all the calls. And I mean, I'd get off from Hardeeville and go straight to the firehouse in Hampton and hang out till 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night. And then on drill nights, be there till 9 or 10, and then take the car home. So I got really good experience, but it's finding the balance, I feel like, is extremely important. And it's gonna be different for everybody. You know, some people might be able to tolerate that for longer. But it was I've seen it with a lot of people, especially in Hampton, because we all did it. We all worked a full-time job and then went and hung out our 2 or 4 days off, whatever it may be, in Hampton. And being around that for so long, it eventually will wear on you. And being able to recognize that is extremely important, and being able to step away and decompress for a while is, I feel like, extremely important for your mental health.
And I don't want you to divulge any information that you don't want to, but what were some of your signs and symptoms? Only if you're comfortable sharing.
So I wouldn't say I was an angry person, but I would be more irritable sometimes. And some of the stuff we had going on in my volunteer department towards the end was not the healthiest. That's all been resolved since then. But yeah, just you know when you're not you. And that was my biggest thing. I knew it was time. Me and my girlfriend had talked about moving over here to Georgia because her cousin and her husband are over here, and it's a little bit cheaper to live in Georgia. It was a little bit closer to work, so I knew it was time to move on.
And how long were you on Hampton for?
Oh, I started there when I was 15 and moved 2 years ago, so right, a little more than 10 years, probably 11 years
Long
altogether.
time. Yeah. Yeah.
And then all the guys I had started with, we had all moved up into officer roles. So the guys who went to the fires and just hung out at the station all day, I don't want to say it turned into a job, but it wasn't as fun as it used to be. And it wore on everybody there. And I knew for me it was time to move on.
No, like I feel like we have similarities because my volunteer organization, when I moved down here, it was volunteer, and then of course they supplemented with part-time staff during the hours where mostly people were working their jobs. And as a volunteer, when I wasn't working at the paint store, I would show up as if I was a part-time person, which I wasn't, but I would show up and work either, I call it work, but I'd volunteer from like either 7 to 4 or the 8 to 5 slot. And I would do everything they did just to get those calls and experiences. But man, after years and you don't realize, like, at one point I was working 3 different organizations. And like, I loved it. I got the experience. I got to run calls. I got to see different things. But, and I was also younger. But man, as we get older and we meet that significant other or that girlfriend or boyfriend, or whatever the case may be, or we get a full-time job, like that's where you have to find that balance and act. And you know, always being top 10 in call percentage, just it was a lot. Like I totally get you, and I'm sure other listeners who have done the same thing, like you want to do everything you can do to be the best person that you can for the community and your organization, but at the end of the day, man, like you can definitely wear yourself out.
Yeah, it's funny you talking about being in the top 10 calls or whatever. When I was 15, I started. I didn't have a driver's license, so I was either relying on my mom to drive me up there, or eventually I had a little motorcycle and I got my permit on that. So I'd ride my motorcycle to calls. And that the year after I started, I was homeschooled growing up, so my schooling was a little bit different. So I could get my work done in the mornings, and then I'd go hang out in the firehouse and run all the calls. And the chiefs, they were all cool about it. They knew what was going on. And the year after I started, I won top responder for the department at 16. So I was ever since then, that's been my life. And yeah, like you said, started early and didn't look back.
Okay. All right. When it comes to physical fitness and the fire service, to me, it's a formula. They correlate with each other. How important is it for others to be physically fit? And when I mean physically fit, I'm not trying to say, and I think people get that wrong connotation about it. I'm not trying to say you need to look like these bodybuilders out there, but what we do is hard on our bodies. It puts stress on our hearts, you know, our heart rate and things of that nature. So how important is it to be physically fit with this job?
It's extremely important. Like you said, we're not asking people to look, have six packs and all that good stuff. Like, that's cool, but we've had guys that have done other stuff in their before they joined the fire department, been collegiate athletes or whatever, in extremely good shape. And I've said for years now, there's a difference between being in shape and being in fireman shape. And I think a lot of physical fitness, you have to be in your gear. You have to get used to being in gear, working in gear. I wish I could say I was like these guys that you've had on before, like Logan and all those guys that are in their gear 7 days a week. I'm not to that point yet. I would like to be one day, but we do a lot of gear workouts, and it you don't think it will make a big difference, but you can tell. You can tell whenever you're in a training and you go through a course or whatever, and you're ready to go again like it's nothing, and then guys are doubled over and they're like, oh my gosh. Yeah, it makes a big difference. I've told guys before too, you can be an extremely knowledgeable fireman, and know what to do, but if you physically can't do the job of, like, you know what to do, but your body, you just can't do it. I might piss some people off saying this, but you're not all that valuable anymore, you know, because we have to be able to do the job, and we have to be able to push ourselves and know our limits to be able to push ourselves to exhaustion and then go a little bit further. And that goes back to the outside training, going to those classes and being tired and keep pushing. You know, I'll be the first to admit I haven't always been in the best shape.
Like everyone else.
Yeah, especially when I was younger and running calls and in gear all the time. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, this is good. And then got a little bit older and got a little bit lazier, and it pops up on you quick. So these past 2 or 3 years, I've really tried to focus more on being in gear, and especially as a driver, you know, not in gear all that often doing work. So trying to stay conditioned and stay in that mindset is extremely important. And I've tried to bring that back these last few years.
Sure. No, definitely. Definitely. To me, you struck a chord, you hit the nail on the head, because there's a big difference between going outside in either sweatpants, a hoodie, shorts, and working out, because your body's free to move. You're more limber. What the work that you're putting in, what you're perspiring out, you know, it goes out in the air and you're like, oh, it feels great. But man, when you put that gear on and it limits your mobility, when it's hot, all that heat's staying in your core, I'm telling you, like, to me, and I get it, some people just don't want to do it. That's cool. And so they do CrossFit and they run, and that's great. But almighty equalizer, that gear on in the heat or cold or whatever the case may be, man, game changer.
Yeah, like you said, it's the equalizer, especially down here in the low country in South Carolina. It's hot pretty much all the time. And especially in the summer, it's hot and muggy, and you don't want to be that guy. I've been that guy before, to put your gear on and go to an entrapment or something and just be smoked. And it's not a good feeling. So being in that gear year round, even when it is hot, you know, it's extremely important. And I've surrounded myself with guys who feel the same way. Like, there's a guy, his name's RJ. He works at a department next to us. He works out in gear all the time too, and he'll come over to our department and work out with us on shift, and we'll have a couple guys come over and we'll just go through some kind of circuit and just smoke ourselves. And it's made a huge difference. I know a lot of people don't like working out in gear, whatever, yada yada yada, but I feel like working out in gear, to be good at the job, I feel like you have to do it.
Absolutely.
Like I said, we try to do it very often. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's every shift, because it's not, but doing something every shift is extremely important. Like I said earlier, you can tell the guys who sit around all day and the guys who actually go out and work, just go out and walk, lift some weights, do some kind of cardio circuit. Something is, we try to do something every shift.
And, you know, you mentioned, like, an example, Logan Broberg, awesome dude, man. But, you know, I'm sure you saw the post he did about the smoke diver program. And, you know, like, if you can do it, fantastic, amazing. If you apply and you get to go through it and you don't pass it, still, you put yourself out there, you put yourself in an uncomfortable situation, you made it through however many days, you did that work. Like, you know, it's better to do that than talk crap about those people that do it, or just say, oh yeah, I can do it, but you never apply yourself. You know what I mean? So one thing, since I've started this podcast, you know, I'll get people to come on and be like, hey man, you've had some heavy hitters or some awesome guests. I am nowhere in that caliber. That's what I always tell people. You are. Everyone is different. Like, we need to stop. You can compare yourself to people, but like, you also, everyone needs to understand, everyone brings a certain skill or mindset or point to the fire service that helps. You know what I mean? Like, I think the most successful crews are not crews that all think alike. It's this person's strength is this, this person's strength's that. Like, we all balance each other out. So I think the people that I've had on this podcast, they make a hell of a damn team, because they all have their strengths, their weaknesses. And that's what, like, I hope that firefighters understand, we can't be good at all. Like, it's just, We just do too much to be good at everything. But if you have a particular set skill in one thing that you can help pass down to the future generation firefighters, you're what's making the fire service better.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said about Logan and that the Florida smoke diver post he made. This past October, this isn't look at me, look at what I've done, whatever. I went to the Wombat Tour and I didn't even make it to the show, man. The first 10 minutes was dropped. Thought I was knew it was gonna be hard. Obviously seeing the videos and knowing the guys that run that course, they're nothing but professional. And I just didn't prepare myself enough. And within, like I said, within the first 10 minutes got dropped. And that hurt because like I said, I tried to do something and push myself hard. And you know, knowing that what I know now, I'll go back eventually and get it. But that one hurt, you know.
But the thing is, you learn from it. You put yourself out there, and that's the thing. Like, yeah, you didn't make it. That's like trying to get to the Super Bowl and you lost in the conference championship. Like, I get it. It does sting. It sucks. But it's the fact that you took the time. It's not like one of these things where you just, yeah, I'll put in for it. And like, I'm sure. I always see that Basil puts on there like attention to detail. You got to make sure your shit's right before they accept you. And you went out there, you didn't make the cut, but you still put yourself out there compared to many others who talk crap about the firefighters that work out in gear, or I don't know why they're doing that. We can get a call here in like 5 minutes. But that's the thing, it doesn't matter. Like your mindset is where it needs to be.
Yeah, and that, like you said, the attention to detail. I put in 4 times before I finally got accepted, and that's the same thing. What you just said. This all the instructors came around. There was, I want to say, there's 10 or 15 of us that got dropped pretty early on, and they all came around and they're like, "Hey, you put yourself out there. Like, good on you. Like, come back and do it. Like, you can come back anytime." And like you said, with the guys who talk trash about working out in gear and you might get a call, whatever, like I was that guy. Like I didn't want to be too tired to not be able to do the job. But since working out in gear, your recovery time is insane. Like you can go from smoked to catch a call and drive down the road 2 minutes and be fine and be good to go. And that's part of being an in-shape fireman and being well-rounded. Like you have to recover fast and be able to go to the next call because we might go from a car fire cutting on the interstate to another call and you can't not go. So I think that's like I've said before, it's very important to work in gear and be well-rounded.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Your personal opinion only. Which characteristic holds more weight in your opinion? Years of service, education, work ethic, or on-the-job experience?
Yeah, so I think work ethic across the board, because like I said, some departments you run a lot of calls and on the job training, like that's where you get your experience. My department, you might not always get those calls. So having good work ethic and putting in the work, going and finding those classes, drilling on your own, hitting the basics is, I think, extremely important because you can take, there's guys that have been on the job for 10 years and it's just like year one all over again for 10 years. So time in service, it means something, yes, but it doesn't always mean what people think it should mean. So work ethic and on the job training when it comes into play are very important. But like I said, work ethic will take you extremely far further than any of those others, I think.
Okay. When it comes to recruitment and retention, in your personal opinion only, where do you see the fire service making the grade when it comes to that, and where do you see that we can improve? Because we all are going through the same, like, we have a hiring process. Only a certain amount of people put in. Wow, half of those are going to get cut before they even make it to the next part. And at the end of the day, you're only left with a few candidates. Where, in your opinion, where do you see we can improve, and what do you see that we're doing good at?
I think where I see a lot of departments doing good at, there's buzzwords that every fireman likes to hear. They like to hear Lowe's hose bed and smooth bores and leathers and all that good stuff, aggressive search culture. That's what every fireman wants to hear. But that's getting firemen that are already in the service and know what they're getting into. Getting people fresh off the street is a little bit harder. And really pushing, I think pushing schedules is important. And your benefit package, the fire service, I feel like does a very good job of taking care, depending on where you are, taking care of their employees and providing insurance. And some places, if you retire from them, that you keep your health care when you leave. That's huge. And not a lot of places advertise doing that, that actually do it. So I think everyone's in kind of a crisis right now, trying to keep people because, people who are at a slower department, they want to go somewhere where it's busy or vice versa or whatever. So it's, I think it's always going to be an uphill battle for recruitment and retention, but there's always ways to improve somewhere, however small it might be.
Absolutely. And, I think that's one thing the younger generation doesn't look at always, meaning the benefit package. Like, it's important. When I was young, if you told me that, I'd look at you like, yeah, I don't care. But I just want to get a job and run calls. But, as you get older, hopefully, people start thinking about like family and spouses and possible kids and things like that. So, yes, it's important that you look at minus the low hose beds, smooth bores, leathers, all that good stuff. Like, what is it? What else can the department, benefit to the individual as well?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you hit it on the head.
I always like to ask this guest this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
I would either like to be back in the seat eventually, back in the officer role, maybe in the training department, not necessarily a training chief, but maybe like a training captain or somewhere in that department. I love training. I love teaching new guys. I love mentoring people and helping them get to where they want to be. It's I tell everybody I want my guys to be better than I am. And that's as firemen, senior guys, that should be your goal with everybody that comes to you. Like you should push them to be better than you are. And that's what I want to do.
Love that advice. I think that's something that sometimes gets lost in translation when individuals hit that officer role. It's not about you, it's about the people that are around you as officers. One thing I can say, I'm fortunate the officer I have now, like I see that in him. He's the last one to get his plate. He waits for everybody else and then he grabs his plate and then we eat. Leading by example, it's not about just him. Like, he will wash dishes, mop, vacuum, take out the trash. And I love that because you have some officers, they lose that sense of, yes, you have a title, you have bugles on your collar, but you're still a firefighter at heart. And we all know officers that fit that mold, but then we all know officers that maybe could use that conversation of, hey, yes, you're a captain, you're a lieutenant, but you are still one of the guys. You have to remember that it's not about you, it's about the people that you are serving alongside with. So the fact that you hit that, I think when you do get to that officer role, that's the mindset that you already have that should help propel you forward. And anybody that's around you, man, I'm sure you'll bring them up as well.
I appreciate that. Like you said, once you hit that role, I know a lot of guys have seen it. They think, oh yeah, I'm the man now. It's not you work for the people that you work with. They don't work for you. You work for them. It's your job to make sure they have what they need, make sure they have their career path set up, make sure they're improving every day. And like you said, you're not As an officer, you're not too good to go in and scrub toilets or wash dishes or do whatever. That's you get paid more because you're supposed to do more. You know, you're supposed to be there for the guys on and off the job. You know, you're supposed to, you should be their go-to no matter what. So I think that's huge as an officer.
No, that definitely. And I could, for me, you know, with my new role, I am a substitute slash part-time, and I always like to use the word allegedly, officer. And so, one thing that I definitely, try to do is, I always remember, okay, I'm in a different role. Like if I'm riding the seat, when we go on medical calls, I don't engage. I let the firefighters in the back engage. I just sit back, make sure the scene's secure, everything's good. All right. Like it was an adjustment, and it's different. Like, I'm like, man, it's, it kind of sucks, but I took the role knowing this is what it is. So luckily for me, like I said, I'm watching my captain, how he operates, and I'm taking bits and pieces and I'm formulating to make myself. Because one thing I feel like new officers get wrong, I don't want to be, and I don't want this to sound weird or wrong, but I don't want to be my captain. I want to have some of his tendencies and make myself kind of like him. But like, we shouldn't want to be just like that person. You should take the good and bad from them, make it your own, and move forward. So I believe that when you get to that role again, when you're back in that right front seat, there'll be no issues for you because your mindset's already there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, you hit on the head. You take the good and the bad with everyone you've ever worked with, every officer, fire. Like you learn from everybody. You start, your leadership starts in the back seat. You know, you start, you see people there and you be like, man, I don't want to be like that guy when I get to his seat. Or, man, I like what he does there. I'm going to take that and put that in my back pocket for whenever I make it up there. Like you said, you learn from everything, the good, the bad. And yeah, thanks, man.
No, absolutely. I have to thank, I don't want to get it wrong. I think it's your girlfriend.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. You know, she reached out. She was just like, hey, she, you know, she wrote a really good little synopsis about you. And I was like, absolutely. So I'm sure you thanked her. I'm sure after I called you, you're probably like, hey, did you do what I think you did? Because I just got a phone call.
She's
but
awesome.
I appreciate her for, obviously, you know, I'm not sure what how much she knows the ins and outs of the fire service, but she obviously knows that you love the job. You know, you listen to other podcasts. And so she was like, hey, like, I think what my boyfriend's doing, it fits your mold, fits your criteria. So I want to say thank you to her in case she listens for reaching out. I appreciate that she did, man. I appreciate you accepting this invitation, coming on and talking shop. And yeah, man, that's all I got for you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I told you before, I was kind of nervous at first because you've had some pretty big names on here. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk shop with you.
No. And like I said, we don't need to, yes, I've had some people I'm like, even I'm amazed I got, like, holy shit, I got this person on here. But I'm telling you, collectively, we all bring something to the table. I hope going forward, like, yes, we should want to be like the David Rhodeses and like the huge heavy hitters of the fire service. But we also need to remember we should be ourselves. We all bring something to the table that we can collectively make the fire service better as a whole. So, brother, I just want to say thanks again for coming on and talking shop, man. I know it's kind of new territory, but to me, you knocked it out the park.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I love what you're doing with this podcast. My girlfriend, I'm sure she gets tired of hearing all the other podcasts I listen to, because anytime I get in the car, I don't listen to music really. I listen to a podcast, and she is sat there on road trips and listened to all of it. And she's awesome. She puts up with a lot. She's a dispatcher for the county that I work in. So she's been around it for a little bit. So she knows, but yeah, man, she's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Like I said, I appreciate her and I appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Yes, sir.